You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Oh, yeah. That can only mean one thing. The godfather of Cleveland Browns Daily will be joining us momentarily, Vic Carucci. I think we started this show, and Vic will have to refresh my memory. I think we started it in like June or July of 2011, and it was a one-hour show back then. It was 6 to 7. And Vic was here in the Dog Bowl. I was running the board back in the Galleria. Vic is ready. It's Dave DiNatale along with Matt Wilhelm and Andrew Gribble and the godfather, Vic Carucci from the Buffalo News, our former senior editor here at the Cleveland Browns, joining us now. Vic, how are you?
I'm great. It's always great to be back with you guys. And, man, football's in the air. Training camp right around the corner. Love it.
It is. Vic, before we – I want to obviously get with the Bills and what is going on out there, but first and foremost, your reaction to the news yesterday that came down from the NFL that Josh Gordon has been reinstated.
Yeah, I had a lot of people ask me about him and actually did a segment on Sirius XM NFL Radio. The topic came up. Just how good is this guy? Because I think a couple things. Didn't play long enough for anyone, including I think people in Cleveland or fans of the Browns, to really get a good feel for him, number one. Number two, he's been away long enough to where you start forgetting a little bit. And my reaction, number one, to those who asked about him is tremendous talent that I think I thought from the first minute I saw the guy as the raw rookie who came in as that late a supplemental signing that he or draft pick that he was, stumbling into camp, not knowing what routes to run. Pat Shurmur pulling his hair out as he watched this guy do the wrong things and just quit on routes and just looked like he didn't belong on a football field. Yet athletically, just showing this immense talent. And as he started to get it, you could see how special he could be. Now, my question is, because physically he may be as talented as any receiver to play, period. The question is, what's there now and how long he's been away from it? What's been his focus? Haven't loved the fact that Johnny Manziel's been his close bud this time. I just don't know that a lot good is going to come from that. Mm-hmm. So does he separate from the knuckleheadedness that has led to him being a non-football player for oh so long? Or is he going to be serious about understanding and appreciating this physical gift that he has, the coaching that he'll need to continue to develop, and blow things up the way he's capable of? That's what we're going to find out.
Vic, you spoke about kind of the angle from Josh's perspective. How do you see the Browns, what the approach they've taken with him so far and kind of being there and supporting, but also kind of being measured in their expectations?
Well, yeah, no, that's a great point. But what's that driven by? It's driven by the very thing that we all know this guy is, tremendously talented. And if you're not tremendously talented, the Browns don't waste a second on this guy. This guy's long gone. This guy would have been – they would have parted ways if they didn't think there was some hope for his skill to develop. Now, the concerns about him other than football will still linger. There's no question. And I don't know how much monitoring. Again, we saw the disaster that was Johnny Manziel. Their attempt to manage that, understanding fully all the problems that he had, and there was no resolution ever. And there was, I think, some probably remarkable patience given to try to get that right, but it just reached the point of no return. I think with Josh Gordon, it's not that. But it's careful, and I think for the Browns' sake, hopefully intelligent. But when you're a team that desperately needs to get things right in so many different ways, you know, this is one layer. This is an asset potentially that you have at your disposal, and I think you need to preserve it however you can.
That's a great point, Vic, and I'm going to turn the page to the Week 15 opponent of the Cleveland Browns, and that is the Buffalo Bills. And always one of the topics, regardless of where he's coaching, is Rex Ryan. And just talk about the pressure on Rex Ryan in year two to win now, and also is there any type of story going around about getting off to a fast start since the Patriots are going to be led by Jimmy Garoppolo in those first 4 weeks and maybe get ahead in the AFC East.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that it's all about winning now for the Buffalo Bills. They're built that way, number one. Just look at their roster structure, salary structure. They're up against it cap-wise, and that is because of the heavy spending they've done over the last couple of years, especially a year ago, with the free agent signings they had, the retaining of players through large agreements, Jerry Hughes and Marcel Darius on the defensive line. I mean, this team is heavily invested in many ways, and then the LeSean McCoy acquisition and then restructuring his deal to give him $6 million more than the $10 million he was already getting in 2015. And so you have him back, and then you draft the way they drafted with three picks, all designed to come off the bus, starting, to quote Doug Whaley, the GM. Shaq Lawson, although he's got that shoulder injury, and we don't know when he's going to be on the field, so that's a big question mark. But Reggie Ragland, the second-round pick, and then Adolphus Washington from Ohio State, all expected to be contributors to the front seven. And when you're drafting that way, and then then the money you spend in free agency is keeping Cordy Glenn at left tackle, keeping Richie Incognito at left guard, keeping your left side of your line intact after they helped you lead the league in rushing last year. All you're saying is we are built to win now, and you brought up Brady and the suspension. Yeah, I mean, again, a lot can happen between now and the fourth game of the season when they play at Foxborough with Brady not scheduled, the quarterback there. But what's the health of the Bills at that point? Where are the Patriots at that point? I would say looking at things today on July 26th, yeah, my short answer is they got to win that game. You don't pass that opportunity. That's a gift. That's a gift. No Brady should mean a win for the Buffalo Bills there. Should mean wins for other teams that have the Patriots on the schedule for those first 4 weeks.
Vic Carucci joining us from the Buffalo News, the godfather of Cleveland Browns Daily here on ESPN 850 WKNR. One nice thing for Buffalo now, Vic, and we always talked about it here in Cleveland, they've got the quarterback in place now in Tyrod Taylor. Not only with the production he showed last year, is he ready also to be the leader of the Bills team as they try to make this push to the next level?
My sense is he is. Based on, and let's qualify it because it's off-season work and such, but just observing him for the couple of months that you really got to be around this team, May and June, off-season workouts, I saw more of a commander, and I certainly saw a guy who was light years from a year ago when he was effectively third on a depth chart that included E.J. Manuel, Matt Cassel, and he was the presumptive outsider coming in who had been a backup for 4 years behind Joe Flacco in Baltimore. You knew very little about him other than the fact, based on his collegiate career at Va Tech, that he could run and that he was predisposed to run more than throw. And we saw that runner when he played in those 14 games, in many instances too often, and it led to a knee injury that knocked him out of a couple of games and other bumps and bruises that I think limited some of what he did. So I think what we saw in off-season work, which, again, no contact, we know what that all is, I saw a guy who carried himself with that sense of I'm the guy, knew he was the guy, more assertive. You could see it in the huddle. You could see the talking, the communicating he did with his receivers. And you could also see a guy who was more aware of himself with regard to the steps he's got to take to be a better player. And his biggest drawback was a reluctance, if not a total unwillingness, to throw to the middle of the field, work that middle area where Charles Clay, the big tight end investment they made, they got from Miami as a free agent, was in one-on-one situations, was either open or certainly had open opportunities. And Tyrod turned those down for lack of trust in himself and in his belief that he could get the ball to him, or just trusting his reach, just trusting what he saw, and then would slide away. They did the helmet cam with him throughout the offseason so they could see in video review what he was seeing and he could see it. And I think what they came away with, listening to David Lee, the quarterback coach, he told me, he said, look, this guy's looking in the right places now. We are definitely getting a sense that he's doing a better job of that. So if that's real, that's a big step. And to your point about leadership, again, I think he just feels as is true with any quarterback, I think you're around a team for a year, your teammates, and you feel more comfortable with being a leader.
And Vic, the injury news obviously throughout the offseason is centered on Sammy Watkins. I'm just wondering what's expected out of him in training camp, and what happens to this offense if he's not ready to go?
Well, it's a big blow. You're taking away the best weapon they have, period. This guy is extraordinary. This guy went on and healthy and just doing it right. It just kills it. He can run fast. He can make cuts. He can out-jump defenders. He's strong. He can be just about everything you want him to be. But he has been hurt, too. The thing is, in just kind of charting his first 2 years in the league, now he missed three games in those 2 years, and then three were all last year. But it's a various injuries, soft tissue injuries that he had. And starting with his rookie year, he had some things that were nagging. So you start to wonder about that. This is the Liz Frank type of foot injury that he has, the broken foot. We know what with Dez Bryant, how that he had that and then came back and then re-injured it. So I think the caution with regard to does this foot injury stay, it's the fifth metatarsal, does it stay in one piece, and how much can he do? I know they've increased his work as they've gotten closer to camp, but I also know they're going to be cautious. My best thought with him is do nothing. Do what he has to do to keep his cardio going, be on the bike, do limited things. But there is no need to push this guy out there in training camp when you know how vital he is to your offense. And then he stays healthy. The guy, I think, will blow it up.
Vic, on the other side of the ball, the departure of Mario Williams to Miami, there was rumblings of him saying he's being misused, he's dropping too much. And what did Rex Ryan do? He went out and brought on his brother, Rob Ryan. How is this defense going to change, and or if at all, and what type of asset do you believe that Rob Ryan's going to be coaching with his brother?
Yeah, well, with regard to Mario, he was a horrible fit in this scheme.
Yep.
I don't think his attitude helped things as much, that much either. I think he was just the guy who couldn't adapt and didn't want to. He loved what Jim Schwartz did with him as a coordinator, and had him worry about nothing but tear after the quarterback. And then he was dropping at times and just not comfortable with that inner, that role where it's all parts working for one cause versus individuals excelling. With regard to Rob Ryan coming in as DC, assistant head coach, he's effectively the defensive coordinator. Yeah. I mean, they still, it's funny how that's worked out. Dennis Thurman still has the title, but you could see it's Rob's show all the way. And
right.
What it is now is more of a traditional 3-4. They were trying to incorporate some elements of 4-3. And again, think about the Ryan coaching tree with the late, great Buddy Ryan. The 46 was an amalgamation of things, as you know. And I think the Ryans pride themselves in being multiple, having variety, giving opponents something to always think about, and believing as a coaching staff that they have an answer for every single thing the offense offers. And I think the big challenge that the Bills need to meet this year defensively, the players that they didn't meet last year, is understand that this thing is like an amoeba. It will change every single snap because, again, they're going to dial up something different because of their belief that, okay, this is what the offense is going to do. Here's our answer. But as players, you have to be able to mentally adjust to that. And a lot of players struggled with that last year. I think, guys, I'm not positive, obviously, until we see it. I think that part of it will get a little better. And I think Rob's hands-on teaching of that, in addition to what his brother puts forth and the other coaches, will help.
Vic Carucci joining us from the Buffalo News. The Browns will play the Buffalo Bills on December the 18th. It's our opponent preview here on CBD. Vic, last Bills-related question for me. How do you look at the running back spot right now with Buffalo? Because obviously they want to be cautious and not overexert Shady McCoy here in the summer, because that obviously was a problem last year.
Right.
And you've got the question marks with both Carlos Williams and Jonathan Williams.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think they are going to probably use as much, and it's getting harder now with – with rosters and injuries that build up, that what you consider camp fodder perhaps in August isn't necessarily so much fodder, that you might have to turn to people. And that ended up being the case last year. The guy named Mike Gillislee ended up playing a role in this running game in the latter part of the season and really an explosive player. But to your point, don't use him or use him on a limited basis. I thought it really started going downhill for him when the Browns and Bills practiced together last summer. Matt was there for that, and you saw that injury, and then he's limping. I mean, he was not right for most of the year. He ended up finishing just under 900 yards. He ended up making the only Pro Bowl selection straight out that the Bills had. They had alternates go, but he was the only one. And they led the league in rushing, but 500-plus was Tyrod Taylor rushing. But I think you got to be even more cautious with him, and he is 28, and the miles do build up. And then the other thing is the suspension of Carlos Williams is a blow. They were very excited about this guy. He got overweight in the offseason. Then he gets the substance suspension. And let's see, overweight, substance suspension. Munchies. Yeah. Anyway, and then you've got Jonathan Williams, the other back that they drafted, who gets a DWI charge. And saw some video of that on TMZ last night. So it's amazing how TMZ always has a video of something. You know, you use the word arrest, and let me see. We're going to eventually see it. And sure enough, all over Buffalo TV yesterday was the video of him not walking so well in Arkansas when they pulled him over. So that's concerning. But I still think that they've got enough with the rest of their backs and the O-line and its understanding of Greg Roman's offense and the complex blocking schemes that he has for the running game to be sustainable.
Vic, you obviously have your eye on the entire NFL, and I'm just wondering what you see in this division, which, you know, the Browns had to play every team in this division this year. Where do the Bills sit in this division, and how tough can it be this year?
Well, I mean, it's tough always, even with Brady suspension in New England, and they're always the team that you say, okay, you concede that they win the division. Who's coming in second to maybe grab a wild card spot? I think that's still applicable, but you've got to take advantage of the situation. Where I thought the Bills failed the most last year, they had enough offense. It wasn't great, but they had enough offense to be a playoff team, a wild card team. The defense falling from fourth in the league in 2014 to 19th knocked them out of it. So what I think the story will be, we always focus on quarterbacks. What's Fitz going to do in New York with the Jets, right? And Ryan Fitzpatrick there, will he re-sign or re-sign with them? And then, you know, the Brady situation, is Tyrod Taylor going to take steps? And then what's going on with Ryan Tannehill in Miami with the new coach, with Adam Gase? Is he going to bring the best out of him? But I say, guys, look at those defenses. And right now, New England's defense could be amazing. I mean, that's the defense that I think people may not appreciate enough of because of the quarterback situation. Their defense is awesome. How good does Miami's defense get with Mario Williams and a different scheme that they have there now? And then Buffalo, do they take steps? And the Jets doing what they did in trying to retain Muhammad Wilkerson, you know, doing that contract signing. I think that was huge for them. And Todd Bowles is a defensive-minded guy. So I think it's the best defense that stands when it's all said and done.
Vic, one last from me, and it's something very relevant to us here in Buckeye country. Cardale Jones, drafted by the Buffalo Bills. How has he looked this offseason, and is he really a project that you feel in a couple years from now that could potentially start and be a franchise quarterback in the NFL?
Well, I love the way this guy looks physically. I mean, he just shows up, and wow, very impressive. And he was in condition, but I mean, when you just see the size and the strength that he possesses, and how that ball can pretty much flick off of his hand with authority, all of that is impressive. But the rawness is also scary at this stage, and it is. It looked to me. And again, May, June, it should look, you should be at the bottom, you assume, and then working your way up. And I thought he was at the very bottom in terms of understanding or not understanding what he was supposed to do. He was so awkward in the taking a snap at the line of scrimmage, because as you guys know, that doesn't happen in Ohio State's offense.
Right. No.
And he said, I never did this before. And David Lee, the quarterback's coach, was talking to him, and you could hear him barking at him, giving him the reminders of, because he would actually put like a foot back to take a step because he was so uneasy about that, a left foot back. And don't do that. Keep your feet level. Keep yourself, because you can push off better, et cetera, et cetera. So the technical, mechanical things, I think, are still going to be a problem for him. And he, the playbook just was so overwhelming to him. So the Bills had a kid named Joe Licata, if you know that name from you, I know you guys do, from the University of Buffalo, right?
Yep,
he was
sure.
a quarterback,
yes.
local guy. Cincinnati Bengals have him in their camp. Well, the Bills had him in for a tryout during a rookie mini camp. And Joe is super smart, and Joe was getting it all. And Cardell admitted to me after, he goes, look, in the meetings, I was turning to Joe and like, Joe, can you help? You know, Joe was helping him. I mean, Joe was his savior, more or less, in terms of the mental part of it, because he just wasn't grasping it, and he fully admitted that he needed that kind of help to retain. So we'll see how far that goes. He's a project, but physically, there's a lot to love there.
Well, Vic, it's appropriate we had you on here today. I was thinking about this. We celebrated, we turned the calendar here. This is the fifth year now starting of Cleveland Browns Daily.
Yeah.
Since you started it in 2011 with yours truly back at the station. And
right.
What a thing it's become. And so much of it is owed to you, my friend, the godfather.
Well, Dave, I was going to say, and my wife pointed this out, July 25th, which was yesterday, right? That I want to say that we started it on the 25th.
Yeah.
On a Monday. So, yeah, the fifth anniversary. Amazing how fast that's gone by. An experience I treasure in my life, for sure. I'll tell you guys one quick thing. The Cavaliers winning that championship, it's interesting that a lot of the discussion I heard here in Buffalo, in Western New York, centered around, hey, if it can happen in Cleveland, you know, can it happen here? I mean, the idea that these are Lake Erie cousins as cities, and I know it inspired hope. I don't know if they're delusional, the Bills fans who think that, but because in football, you know, you just don't get a LeBron James to change everything for you. And even if you have that caliber player, you still need so many other parts. But it just was interesting how that Cavs championship inspired a lot of folks here.
That is great stuff. Vic, it's always a pleasure. Best to your family, and we'll talk to you down the line, my friend.
We'll talk down the line, and we'll see you guys during the season.
Thanks, Vic.
All right, that is Vic Carucci, now of the Buffalo News. He is the godfather of Cleveland Browns Daily, as he said. We launched this show on July 25th, 2011, and now it's year five. Pretty amazing stuff. All right, Groups, did you
– good.
You look like you're about to say something. Yeah. Let's get a break here. We'll get back on clock. We've got a couple of positional breakdowns that I want to go through with Gribbs and Matt Wilhelm, the Browns tight end position, the Browns defensive line position. Plus, we've got time for your calls and tweets, 216-578-0850, on Twitter at Browns_daily. It is Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Dave DiNatale, Matt Wilhelm, Andrew Gribble back here at the Dog Bowl. Hope you enjoyed our conversation there with Vic Carucci. Great, great stuff there from Vic, the former host of this show, Cleveland Browns Daily, now, of course, with the Buffalo News. You can hear Vic, by the way, also on the weekends. He does press coverage, I think, on Saturday afternoons on Sirius XM NFL Radio. So good chance to catch a godfather still doing the radio thing. Guys, we meant to do this yesterday, and the Josh Gordon news totally threw us off here a little bit, so we weren't able to get to it. But as we continue in this final countdown before the start of training camp, our position previews, I want to start first with the tight end position. And it's one of the positions that, you know, you look at it, your starter's locked in. I mean, it's Gary Barnidge. It's undisputed. But I'm real curious, once we start this thing and we see everybody out there on Friday, to get a look at Seth DeValve, the rookie, the fourth-round pick.
Yeah, but I don't necessarily believe, and there's two parts of this. A, he's a rookie, and B, he's not your prototypical NFL tight end.
Correct.
So, and I think as we get into the discussion, this is going to be a position as a backup to Gary Barnidge that will be, you know, drawing some of my attention as a position battle for this football team. You've got E.J. Bibbs, as Zagura calls him, Bibtacular, who showed a lot in the preseason around this time last year. Can he do it again, enough so to make the active roster? You've got Randall Telfer, who was drafted last year, you know, spent the year on, you know, the injured reserve. I think it was a foot injury.
Headed at the combine.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, he's going to be the prototypical blocking tight end. And then to bring up Seth the Valve again, Seth the Valve to me is going to be the defensive version of Joe Schobert, because he's really not a tight end and he's kind of not really a wide receiver. But he's going to play in between. He's going to be a mismatch guy for us. And I think Joe Schobert's going to do the same thing on defense.
I think it's interesting, too, because you talk about Bibbs and DeValve, because I think those are the two guys we would see as kind of the front runners for that number two tight end job. Neither of those guys are necessarily built like Barnage.
Correct.
Like they're both a little bit shorter, a little more squattier, more the H-back type guy. Telfer, similar body type to Barnage, but a little bit bigger, can be a blocking tight end. It's hard to predict how this room's going to shake out, because we still need to learn what this Hugh Jackson offense is really going to be. And it comes down to the math, not just with tight ends, but also I lump in fullbacks with this group too,
right,
where I think you might keep a combined four. Now, does that mean you're keeping four tight ends or three tight ends at a fullback?
That means Malcolm Johnson.
I was going to say, then you got to throw Malcolm Johnson in there.
And the undrafted free agent Patrick Scove.
Right.
So I think there's dueling competitions, and you wonder if they decide this team needs a fullback or this team really needs a traditional blocking tight end, or they could do it. I could see a situation where you don't even have that traditional blocking tight
end. Right. And I'll throw a question back to you is, you know, how concerned are you with depth beyond Gary Barnage? And again, I'm a worst case scenario guy, and I'm sure Sashi Brown's got contingency plans.
You have to think of those terms.
What happens if we even Barnage for a week? You know, if we're rolling and he's playing that Tyler Eifert-ish role in Hugh Jackson's offense, and we're rolling and he sprains his ankle, he gets concussed, and we're, you know, and it's like he's going to be in the protocol. Who do we move on with?
Yeah, that's tough, because I think you brought it up a couple months ago just about, you wouldn't have been surprised if this team added a veteran tight end to fill out that room, but clearly that wasn't a move they made. And at the same time, on the D-line, added a veteran because they needed that in that room after Desmond Bryant went down. So it is interesting, because I don't know if there is an answer behind Barnage at this moment, but they obviously have to feel some kind of confidence in that group, because they've got, when you have a 90-man roster, you seemingly have contingency plans all over the place.
Right.
But I don't know if that's Bibbs. I don't know if that's even a guy I saw in OTAs working with the first team, someone was Connor Hamlet.
Right.
You know, that I was going to ask you about Connor Hamlet and J.P. Holtz.
Yeah, I mean, Hamlet's a taller, looks like kind of similar body type as Gary Barnage.
Right.
And I think he was kind of filling that role while Barnage was out during OTAs. So, you know, maybe he's a guy that we're not paying enough attention to, and he can emerge in these first couple weeks of training camp. But, I do – that's why I might list Barnage in my – top three most irreplaceable players on his roster at this moment, because of what we saw last year and what's behind him now.
Matt, go back to Barnage. You know, we talked last week, and we had, I think, the question, the Friday forecast, who was going to catch the most passes. Barnage is going to be a marked man this year.
Yes.
You know, no matter when Josh Gordon comes back and all that, because, you know, he's the legit Pro Bowl threat this team has, and he's not going to take anybody by surprise anymore.
Oh, he definitely is, and I think at least for the beginning of the football season, until, you know, Corey Coleman and Andrew Hawkins, Jordan Payton, Rashard Higgins are able to get open and make plays and move those chains, I think for both Josh McCown and RG3, regardless of who's the quarterback, you look to Barnage first with his matchup on a smaller defensive back or a less quick linebacker covering him in man-to-man coverage, or, you know, in some type of zone covers or matchup coverage, and you look to Barnage to be able to make the type of plays that he did and make the catches to move the chains and even be the threat that he was down in the red zone. That's kind of all changed. He's going to get a lot of attention at the line of scrimmage. He's going to get banged by outside linebackers and beat around by a defensive end to not allow him to get into his route, and then they're getting hands on him inside that 5-yard zone, and then I wouldn't be surprised if he's doubled at times. And it's until those guys can win outside in one-on-one situations against press man coverage.
I think the quarterback here is key, because Barnage produced no matter who was behind center, but I think there was clearly a great rhythm that he had with Josh McCown
Definitely.
That maybe wasn't there with Johnny Manziel last year. It just seemed like Manziel was able to find Barnidge throughout the game, but it was McCown found him in rhythm, kind of the first option.
For explosive plays.
Right, and it worked within the flow of the offense. And that was even despite when defenses really did start adjusting to him, knowing that the Browns really didn't have any other outside threats outside of Travis Benjamin. So it'll be key to see who wins a starting quarterback job and how they quickly establish that relationship with Barnidge, because you know some quarterbacks' reaction when they're in trouble is to find the tight end. Others are to maybe chuck it to the side or have a bailout receiver, and we'll see how that goes with whoever wins the job here.
While we're doing the position breakdown, let's get to what we were going to do today, and that's the defensive line. And you felt coming in, it's like, okay, you've got Danny Shelton for his second year. You've got guys like Hughes and Cooper, and then you're going to have old reliable Desmond Bryant. Well, all of a sudden now things have changed. As we know, we've talked about this, Desmond Bryant likely out for the year. So it's going to test the mettle of some young guys, Matt, to see how quickly they're ready to go. And also the fact that the Browns felt like they needed to bring in the veteran Nick Hayden.
No doubt. And I think you figure, 2 weeks ago prior to the Dez Bryant news, there were five guys that all of us collectively, I'll even throw in Gibbs and Zagura, all five of us would have said are going to make this football team. And that was John Hughes, yes. Xavier Cooper, yes. Danny Shelton, yep. Carl Nassib, and Dez Bryant.
Yep.
Okay, mm-hmm. Dez Bryant gone, and you've now signed the Hayden kid. You've got Jeff Coat probably going to take some reps there. You might move Xavier Cooper over there. You have Jamie Meter, who's competing, with Lawrence Stamples for that backup nose position. And so there's a lot of shakeup. And again, losing Dez Bryant on what he means to a 3-4 defense is kind of like it scared me a little bit, because we have to get our production from somewhere. And I think there's now more open competition for those backup roles at all three positions than there ever has been.
And this makes me wonder when you get back Armonte Bryant week 5.
Right.
Does he now go back to that traditional defensive line role that he had in the past, and you end that outside linebacker
by necessity.
And Nathan brought up that same point, and I pulled out our trusty media guy that stands here, and it's Dez Bryant is lined up 6'6" 310 5 technique, and Armonte Bryant 6'4" 260. It's just giving up 50 pounds, and playing inside and yet being the athlete that Dez Bryant was, it's very hard to replace. In spots, I'm sure you could maybe pencil him in some certain positions, but down in, down out, and his ability to stop the run while also being a dual threat to get to the passer as we stop the run is going to be very difficult for him just because of his size.
There aren't many guys like Dez Bryant on the market right now.
There are not.
No. Gribbs, and we spent a lot of time yesterday talking with Danny Shelton. He's going to be, by the way, at Wayside Furniture tonight from 6 to 7.
Right.
Bring your number 71 jersey.
Win a lava lava.
Bring your 71 jersey as it's the switch to 55. What are you going to be looking for when you watch Danny here in training camp and everything to see his progression from year one to year two?
I think the first thing is this is something that's going to stick with him probably his whole career. Is you want him coming back to training camp in the kind of shape you left at OTAs. I think that's something that they're confident that he'll be in. And two, you just want to see him have a consistent impact on the game. And I just don't know. I just don't think he'll ever be a guy that is piling up stats in this defense.
So Casey Hampton never did it. Vince Wilfork never did it.
And he has to get over that, I think, mentally, because in his last season at Washington, he was putting up absurd numbers his position that he just can't expect in the NFL. But you want to see him make those plays on occasion. But really, out of him, you just want him occupying two blockers at a time every play and opening up things for the guys behind him, Demario Davis, Chris Kirksey, just putting his other guys in position and not just getting taken over. I didn't really – last year it was up and down for him. I didn't really ever see him get dominated, though. The expectations have to be different for him.
You said it perfectly. He didn't put up big numbers. And I think some fans were just because the Browns were rotating so much in the defense they had last year, you'd see Danny on the field, but then you'd see him off for – lots of stretches and Matt, it's unless you're really watching, it's hard to gauge what he's doing out there. But the point's well made from Grips. It wasn't like he got overwhelmed.
No,
or dominated.
Not at all. And when he got slightly overwhelmed and a tendency to get dominated by maybe a veteran center or a crafty vet was when his pad got high. Mm-hmm. And that's something that Danny can control. And then by being 20, 25 pounds lighter, he's going to be in better shape, so he doesn't have a tendency to get tired and your pads rise. But to go back and answer your question, And I know Gribble, did diligence with this question. But he's got to own his phone booth, if that makes sense. And he said that's taking on the double teams. It's not going to be splitting those double teams and making tackles for loss. No, it's going to be latching onto two and allow, as he said, DeMario Davis and Christian Kirksey coming downhill and making that play in the hole because Danny did his job for a two-yard gain. So then they're second and eight. You know, maybe they run again. It's okay, now it's third and six. Third and six plus, and Danny Shelton's going to help us. And I think, as Danny, wants to get in best shape and got his weight down, he's going to show the coaches that he deserves and can play three downs. But even in my mind, understanding who's going to make up that defensive line room, Danny's going to have to knock off Xavier Cooper or John Hughes to get on the field in some of those third down situations. So he's just not quite there yet. But on first and second down, Danny Shelton's going to help us stop the run. He should never have more than three sacks in a season, and he's probably never going to have more than four tackles for a loss in a season. He's got to own the garden center of whatever team we play.
Now, he'll be backed up at least from the start, as you said, Jamie Meter. But, we've talked about it. Once you get past those first, the couple of guys, I mean, Jamie's a guy that's going to have to really work here in camp to ensure that he's got a spot.
Yeah, and I think you're just going to keep an eye these first couple weeks of training camp. Always keep an eye on the waiver wire. This is going to be a group that you're going to see guys added throughout the early part of camp and just seeing what you got and hoping you can get someone to stick. Danny mentioned it yesterday, a guy like Dylan Wynn, who this organization clearly values in some capacity. He was on the practice squad all last year, nearly made the roster last year. There's something about him that's making them see what he can do, and maybe he cracks the roster over Jamie Meter. You work out the math with how you can get him in there. So it's going to be competitive, but I think that it just really did. The whole dynamic of this changed when Desmond Bryant went down, and not in a good way.
What about guys on the end? Carl, keeping expectations for Carl Nassib reasonable, just understanding that he's going to have a tough transition, a bit of a transition here from college to pros, and he put up such big numbers in college. He put up the big numbers, and obviously we've talked about it on the linebacker spot. Ogba put up big numbers, but it's a little different now, Matt.
It's very different, and I think Carl Nassib's listed, 6'5", 285? But that was as a dominant defensive end in a 4-3 scheme at the college level. And I'm just hesitant to believe that Carl Nassib as a rookie, at least early on in the season, if he comes in reports at 6'5", 285, can play and win consistently the way we thought Dez Bryant was going to win consistently. Because as we found out in years past, if the scheme wasn't good, at least, and it started up front, if the defensive line didn't play their proper technique or they get hooked, it affects the linebackers and it affects the safeties. And the one thing that I don't want is, a light in the butt, Carl Nassib, and they're getting owned, by a double team between a guard and a tackle, which gets up on our backer, who can't get off a block, and then you're forcing a safety to come down and make a play, in a gaping hole with a running back running downhill with 5 yards of steam. It's just bad. So I'm going to be – there's a lot of things to watch in this training camp about this rookie class and even, with the depth chart on what we're going to do behind guys that we probably pencil in to make this football team and even start for this football team.
I mean, I want to see Xavier Cooper now in year two. I mean, so much was when the Browns drafted him, it's we've never seen a guy, this quick a first step. And from a technique standpoint, Gribbs, he's got everything you want. And now you just want to see if he can be consistent and do it week in and week out and refine things going into year two.
Right. I think for him it's the snaps in between the sacks that he needs to be better. I think you saw it in the preseason last year and you saw it occasionally at the end of the season last year. When he gets that first step and it works, he gets the quarterback real quick and he looks like a great player. And I think but his snaps were limited, I think, throughout the season because it's about what you do in those other plays and how – sometimes defensive linemen can mess up and you don't really notice it and it turns into a big game for the offense.
And it looks bad on a safety or linebacker who misses a tackle in space, but if the defensive lineman done their job, it would have reduced the space, made an easier tackle, and have been a 3 or 4 yard gain instead of an 8 or 9 yard gain.
Yeah, I think for the good thing with Cooper is anyone that talks to him, you come away impressed because this is a guy that wants to be as good as he can be. And I think he saw the opportunity late last year. I think it was a wake-up call for him at the week one when he wasn't even active for that first game. He got better from that point. I think now with Dezmond Bryant out, I think he is the player that you circle that will have the biggest impact mm-hmm. because of Bryant's absence.
Since this is the last position preview from the defensive side, tomorrow we'll wrap it up with looking at the running backs. From the defensive line to linebackers to secondary, biggest strength of the defense and group that you're most concerned about?
I would say, to go first, I'll say linebackers is probably the position that I have most confidence in now. And then I would say that I'll go defensive backs as second, and I think most concerned now about the defensive line.
Yeah, and I'll get even more specific with the area I'm most confident in is the inside linebackers with DeMario Davis and Christian Kirksey. Mm-hmm. You still have some question marks on the outside, especially after the lack of pass rush you had last year. I want to see what the Browns can do with Paul Kruger at getting some help on the other side and see how much of an impact that can have. For me, it's kind of a tie between defensive line and safeties that maybe has the most concern just because of inexperience and safety. Yeah. But I think if your defensive line is really struggling, that can have a ripple effect on the rest of the defense where you can maybe rearrange and get by without some fantastic safety play from a group that has a lot of potential but overall is pretty inexperienced right now.
All right, that is our position breakdown, looking at both the defensive line and the tight end as we try to get you everything you need to know about this Browns roster looking ahead to the start of training camp later this week. We will take a break. We'll come back and wrap up today's edition of Cleveland Browns Daily here on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Back here on Cleveland Browns Daily, Dino, Wilhelm, and Gribble will be back with you tomorrow. We'll have another two-hour extravaganza as we'll have our look at the San Diego Chargers, our final opponent's preview tomorrow. Kevin Acey will join us out in San Diego. He's one of their great columnists.
My guy, he's good.
Kevin's tremendous. So we'll do that tomorrow. We'll have another CBD replay. We will also focus on the running back position tomorrow. So we'll talk Crow, Duke, and a lot more tomorrow, so I'm looking forward to that. And then, guys, it'll be Zagura back, finally back from his extended vacation on Thursday, and then everybody out there on Friday.
Yes.
I haven't seen the weather yet for Friday. I have no idea what it's supposed to be, but, I mean, if it's anything like it's been the last couple of days, I mean, it's perfect training camp weather.
No, hot. It is not perfect
hot.
Training camp weather. It's perfect
hot.
For you to watch
yeah,
if
right.
you're in the shade.
Right.
For you as a player, putting on a helmet pad, putting on 25 pounds of pattage, it's not
that's
ideal.
That's a good word, by the way.
Pattage.
Yes.
Thank you. Ideal training camp weather is probably like low 80s. You know, for most cities,
yeah.
even high 70s, and you are like, it's like glorious. You might like practicing inside in the air conditioning. So
was that what it's like in San Diego every day?
San Diego can get hot, but I mean, most days was yes, high 70s, low 80s.
Current projection for Friday is 80 degrees, but thunderstorms likely. So Ooh. Hopefully they can find a window. I mean,
yeah.
in the summer, it never rains all day.
No.
They got to find room to get practice in there.
Yeah.
Last year's training camp was chilly, downright chilly at times. I had a jacket on multiple times.
Well, and it was funny. I saw the Browns highlight video on the NFL Network for this year, and they went back and they showed the mini camp practice, the rookie mini camp practice we had in May up at the stadium. Remember how cold it was that day?
Miserable.
Oh, that was not. I mean, I was even on the field. I was in the tunnel. Gibbs and I were doing a broadcast that morning. It was cold.
That was a welcome to Cleveland moment for that rookie class.
Yes. Yeah,
that was like their first Cleveland experience.
All right, guys. Great stuff. We'll,
too, man.
We will wrap it up with the three of us anyway tomorrow. Our thanks to Vic Carucci for joining us. Always fun to hear from the Godfather. Cannot recommend enough. Go back to clevelandbrowns.com, and we'll have this the show archived a little bit later on. Check out Vic. He had some great, great thoughts on both the Browns, the Bills, the NFL, and more. We also thank our producer, Mike Dreamer. For Matt Wilhelm, for Andrew Gribble, I'm Dave DiNatale. Thanks for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily. We've got the Golden Boys coming up next with Greg Brenda and join you at 5 with Bruce Hooley. That's all straight ahead right here on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.